Some of you may have heard the little tale of an earnest spiritual seeker who approaches a hot dog vendor and says, "Make me one with everything. Make me one with everything." The vendor loads on the toppings, hands it to the seeker and says, "$4, please." The seeker hands over a $10 bill, which the vendor puts in his cash box. After some awkward moments, the seeker inquires, "What about my change?" "Ah," replies the vendor, "change must come from within." And as many deep thinkers have affirmed, there is great truth in this notion. For example, the pioneering German psychoanalyst Otto Rank said, "What we achieve inwardly will change outward reality." A view that renowned Czech writer cum statesman Václav Havel seconded when he said that, quote, "consciousness precedes being." That is, to a great degree, our inner mindset manifests in our outer reality. Consciousness precedes being. Cultural historian and philosopher Richard Tarnas broadens and underscores this idea when he speaks of the profound power of worldviews. He says, "Our worldview is not simply the way we look at the world. It reaches inward to constitute our innermost being and outward to constitute the world. Worldviews create worlds." Yet, of course, life is always a dynamic interface of inner and outer, of stimulus and response, external event and internal interpretation, inner vision and outward ventures. And while other insightful people, among them the Buddha, remind us that we always have a choice as to how we interpret things the outside world presents to us, when these bring unforeseen and sometimes unwanted changes to our accustomed situation, at first, this can be difficult because it's disorienting. Our external world has changed, and our internal world and worldview need some time to catch up. I'll expand on this thought in a moment, but let me approach it with a brief aside. A number of you know I served as UUCPA's sabbatical minister in the latter half of 2023. And a few might recall that for that fall's water communion service, I offered some reflections based on the Grateful Dead song, Ripple. I knew the Dead had formed in the Bay Area, but until then, I did not know that it was right here in Palo Alto. Nor did I know, as some church research points to, that founding member Jerry Garcia and his first wife were very likely married at UUCPA. Which brings me to a question for you. Especially in the early days, after the Dead's founding in 1965, besides their music, what were they and their Deadhead fans most associated with? A lyrical hint comes from their song, Truckin'. "What a long, strange trip it's been." Shout it out, somebody. Acid, LSD, and more broadly, yes, psychotropic consciousness expanding substances, and including their music. And, you know, it was kind of a return to shamanic days of trance dancing under the influence and all that. So, and that's certainly what the Deadhead. I had a friend who was a Deadhead for a while, first a psychedelic one and then a straight and sober one. And when Jerry Garcia died, he said, "Man, my guru died and my religion stopped touring." And there was a lot of truth to that. Anyhow, I share this to introduce a little historical perspective on change. Because in the 60s, there was another cosmic trip that was acid-free, but just as mind-expanding. On December 23rd, 1968, NASA astronaut Jim Lovell pointed a live TV camera from Apollo 8 and framed a granular black and white shot of Earth from 175,000 miles away. The next day, as the spacecraft again rounded the moon, Crewmate Bill Anders snapped perhaps the most perspective enlarging photograph in history, an image of the Earth ascending over the lunar horizon that came to be known as Earthrise. The following day in the New York Times, poet Archibald MacLeish articulated the massive shift in awareness this image triggered. To see the Earth as it truly is, small and blue and beautiful, in that eternal silence where it floats, is to see ourselves as riders on the Earth together, siblings on that bright loveliness in the eternal cold. Recalling that worldviews create worlds, this literal new worldview that beheld the Earth and thus all humankind as it truly is, evoked like responses in countless hearts at the time. One of these was mythologist Joseph Campbell, who spoke to the collective revisioning this calls for. As viewed by astronauts from the moon, the Earth lacks those lines of socio-political division that are so prominent on maps. One life. All that is required is a general change of vision to accord with these contemporary facts. Echoing almost verbatim words Campbell also expressed elsewhere, world religion scholar Houston Smith draws the obvious conclusion in a one-line declaration of this interdependence. Planet. And Smith recognizes the challenge of adjusting to this unprecedented circumstance. He says, when historians look back on our 20th century, they may remember it not for space travel or the release of nuclear energy, but as the time when the peoples of the world first came to take one another seriously. The change that this new situation requires of us all is staggering. A measure of initial discomfort and trepidation, in accommodating this higher moon's eye view is certainly understandable. As another psychedelic folk rock band called The Birds sang in 1966, 8 miles high, and when you touch down, you'll find that it's stranger than known. Yet with some patience, effort, and support, people do successfully adjust to altered situations all the time, often with not only tolerable, but deeply gratifying results. But Campbell's general change of vision and the essential restructuring that stems from it can only start with admitting that a shift has occurred. And in this regard, Houston and Houston Smith, we have a problem. Because although we can all get a bit psychologically stuck at times, differences in both innate temperament and external surroundings, say being raised in an atmosphere of open exploration versus amid rigid religious or social beliefs, means that the ultimate degree of flexibility in adjusting to change varies drastically. And from the mid-20th century until today, this has fueled a war of the worldviews between those striving to foster a more equitable and sustainable planetary community and those determined, consciously or unconsciously, to retain their psychological equilibrium and or parochial power and privilege. Among the latter, from certain political factions to their strange bedfellow and acutely hypocritical religious bodies, to corporations, to media and social media outlets, and on many other cultural fronts, unimaginable resources are aimed at maintaining these. And all these parties and efforts are just as profusely unimaginative, for they all amount to what scholar Henry Giroux calls disimagination machines. Because in that walled-off and hemmed-in worldview, imagining that society can be different is deemed dangerous. Hence, to sustain the current decaying order, it's imperative to shrivel the imagination and ideally suck it totally dry. One tactic is to present that order as self-evidently and unashamedly beyond reproach. This involves categorically dismissing any and all criticism, along with any proposals of new imaginative possibilities, as invalid, nigh unto insane, sometimes with vicious scorn and ridicule. This feeds into another gambit, which is to sanctimoniously blame those who, in an equitable and sustainable planetary community, would now require equal consideration. To essentially say, if you don't fit my worldview, you're the problem. One wishes that admitting and adjusting to change wasn't so doggone hard for some folks. After all, everyone knows change is inevitable, except, as Robert C. Gallagher notes, from a vending machine. But under all the unrighteous rage and disimaginative denialism is a powerful hidden motivator, which mythologist Michael Mead identifies. Change is the essence of life, but as people face great challenges and an unknown future, they tend to become fearful. As fear spreads, most try to cling to something familiar and try to control things in order to reduce the terror of being overwhelmed. Yet the collective overwhelming lesson of history on both collective and individual levels is that closing down and holding tight to familiar things does not work. In the dens of disimagination, fear manifests in nothing so much as trying to control everything and everyone by closing down, including the creative imagination, and holding tight, now to the point of a planetary near-death grip. But as the Quaker writer Parker Palmer rightly says, forced solutions are false solutions. Forced solutions are false solutions. So all this effort to cling to the familiar can only result in a paralyzed and petrified, meaning both fearful and ossified, pseudo-security, all the while detrimentally impeding the evolutionary changes now required. Remember that in our earlier reading, Darren Abrahams cited writer Charles Eisenstein's statement that collectively we have entered a time between stories. That is, a time when the cornerstone assumptions and narratives that have given society direction and meaning crumble. A time when the caterpillar of culture becomes a fragile, immobile, vulnerable chrysalis, but the butterfly is not yet formed. And Richard Tarnas, here abridged by me, highlights the scale of our historical in-between setting. We are living in one of those rare ages, like the end of classical antiquity or the beginning of the modern era, that bring forth, through great stress and struggle, a genuinely fundamental transformation in the underlying assumptions and principles of the cultural worldview. The outcome of this tremendous moment in our civilization's history is deeply uncertain. Something is dying, and something is being born. The stakes are high for the future of humanity and the future of the earth. Given this, it's understandable that we might resonate with journalist Edward R. Murrow's quip that anyone who isn't confused doesn't really understand the situation. Which here we could tweak to anyone who isn't unsettled. And no wonder. Yet in the midst of this great stress and struggle, high stakes, transitional age, Organizational development expert William Bridges affirms a timeless truth. It is only in between, when the old ways disintegrate and the new ways haven't yet taken shape, that creative answers are discovered. And despite all the disimaginative people still attached to some blend of religious dogma, presumptions of cultural superiority, and or political and financial interests that keep them scared and mired, myriad others, including, I suggest, most you use, now possess a global Earthrise perspective. And with it, a willingness to better understand the realities and experiences of others, an increasing sensitivity to oppression, and a widening circle of moral concern that insists on the creative restructuring needed to remedy past and current inequities and align with our new global village reality. And as I shared at the start, consciousness precedes being. What we achieve inwardly will change outward reality. Worldviews create worlds. Finally, let's recall some more from our reading. That when a butterfly caterpillar becomes a chrysalis, it completely dissolves until it's just a genetic goo. That this goo is a temporary transitional state, and that this goo contains special imaginal cells that transform it from an immature to a mature stage of existence, one that can now take wing and perceive a much wider world. So in this betwixt and between cultural goo period, I would ask you to deeply ponder how you can be the most powerfully imaginal cell you can, well, imagine. And in this often troubling transitional time, I also encourage you to recall that love is stronger than fear. And that in UUism, you are connected to a living tradition of loving, forward-thinking change makers. And that together, we can be part of choosing and creating a better, more life-affirming story than the one that is on the way out. I'll underscore this aspiration in the form of a prayer composed by UU Minister Reverend Derek Jackson. Spirit of love, waymaker, give me strength. Help me to be open to what may come. Help me to learn and grow. Help me to have faith in this world, even in times of confusion, struggle, and pain. Remind me that I am not alone, that I am one of many who are dedicated to the transformation of the world, and that this transformation requires my own willingness to change as well. Namaste and blessed be.